His skin is white just like a ghost. Thick Irish roots and his blonde hair. And he sounds like a Chicago super fan. A music nerd with a collection of CDs from here to there. Yes, Andy Dare is in Chicago, interviewing and barbecuing. It's the Andy Dare Show. It's the Andy Dare Show.
Welcome to the Andy Dare Show. I'm your host, Andy. Today it is episode 169. We got a real cool episode, and I am joined by a reoccurring guest, Trevor Manier. And yes, this is our second chat. The first one was in the first couple months that I was doing the show. And yeah, kind of got my sea legs with Trevor. I was it was an early interview for the show, and I really was kind of not nervous, but just kind of stumbling over myself, and not the greatest quality audio you can find out there on the web. But it's a nice chat. That was back in 2011. I think the whole episode is up on YouTube. Just search our names. But yes, today he is back, and he has been joining the band of, well, he plays around with a lot of different musicians, but recently he joined up forces with a singer-songwriter named LP, and they are going on tour this summer all over these really cool venues in America and opening for Brian Ferry of Roxy Music fame. And that will be an awesome tour to check out. Not only is Brian Ferry an icon, LP is really cool herself, has an awesome, interesting story. Hopefully, maybe on in a couple weeks, we'll be able to chat with LP ourselves. But me and Trevor, yes, he grew up kind of in the same area as me. We had a lot of common friends. So I thought, why not check out what he's up to? And I want to thank everybody who checked out the Kevin Matthews Show last week when I did a little guest spot talking about music, the Billboard Awards. Lots of stuff. Apple Music, the app on your phone that pretty much brings all the music to you, and a whole lot of stuff. I got some good feedback from it, so hopefully I'll be talking to Kevin later this summer. We'll see what happens. But yes, Trevor Manier, check out the interview coming up in a little bit. With other news, I just got some new ink, meaning I got an article published for Chicagoist.com. It's one of my, I think it's like my 8th or 9th time. This week we got Garbage and their brand new album, Strange Little Birds, which is out. It's out now on Vagrant Records. And I thought we'll come right back and we'll read a little excerpt from my latest ink for Chicagoist. We'll be right back after this.
Yo, what goes on, people? Jay Porks here. Just reminding you to keep it locked to the Dear Network throughout 2015, where you can get the Tyler Kale Show, the smooth, sultry tones of the Jay Porks Experience, or the Andy Dear Show. Keep it locked to AndyDear.com. 2015, big things coming.
What's up, baby doll? This is your favorite rapper, and my name is Booger the Congested Rapper. And I got that name when I was 11. I was diagnosed with ultra-phlegmatism. Meaning that I got all these kind of boogers and snot rockets and spitting loogies like it ain't no thing all the dang time. So now when I'm rapping, I keep a bucket under the microphone and I can just spit right into that. And, you know, this booger signing off. One love. Keep it real, baby doll.
And we are back. I want to thank Booger the Congested Rapper and also Jay Porks for the nice shout-out during the break. So, yes, my latest Chicagoist review, published Friday, about Garbage, Strange Little Birds. Been a fan of this band for probably about 20 years. Got into them after that first album just had its, like, 18th single. So it was just kind of an unmistakable new sound for the 90s. And it does hold up, and their influence is pretty much felt in a lot of different places throughout the music scene, and even now in 2016. But the cool thing is they haven't really twitched their style too much or changed it or tweaked it. They've really just kind of honed it down to a science, you know. So I thought I'd read a little excerpt from my latest review for Chicagoist. You can find the link right at AndyDare.com. It'll take you right to it. I want to thank everybody at Chicagoist.com for, you know, supporting my little opinions about music. So let's check it out. Check them out at Chicagoist.com. All right, Garbage makes the 90s sound fresh again on Strange Little Birds. by Andy Dare and published June 10th, 2016. Butch Vig, Steve Marker, and Duke Erickson could have coasted when they formed Garbage with lead singer Shirley Manson. Vig had already produced era-defining work with Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins. He could easily have stuck with the angsty hard rock that made him famous. Instead, Vig and company created Garbage's eponymous debut album, which sounded digital yet somehow still human and warm. It was the first alt-rock album that sounded completely of the 90s. Now the band is releasing their seventh album, Strange Little Birds, out Friday on Vagrant Records, but it only makes sense that in this context of the band's early years as 90s innovators. Anyone who's seen the Smart Studio story knows that Garbage was the exact opposite of an overnight sensation. Vig and his studio in Madison, Wisconsin had been creating Midwestern punk and jangly alternative music nearly a decade before Nirvana became a band your grandmother had heard of. Shirley Manson, a beautiful Scottish vocalist whose band Angelfish caught Vig and Company's ear back in 1994, had been gifted with a natural charisma. Simultaneously tough as nails and a beacon of style, Shirley would become a mid-90s cover girl and help personify the look of heroin chic. So when these two somewhat disparate factions combined forces after working separately for years, the product was undeniable. Stupid Girl, Queer, Only Happy When It Rains, Push It, and countless other songs became part of the late 90s zeitgeist, fusing alt-rock with modern drums, bass, and dance sounds. All right, that's just a little excerpt. I want you to head over to andydare.com, click the link, and check out my latest review on Garbage and their new album, Strange Little Birds. All right, and I want to thank everybody who has subscribed on iTunes. You just search Andy Dare Show. I come right up. Give us a 5-star review and tell a friend. You can also find it on the podcast app with the iTunes or on the iPhone. That is such a nice thing. I just have all the podcasts I listen to. They just come right to my phone. It's just automatic. And if I don't want to hear it, I just delete it. If I want to fast forward, you just listen at your own demand. So that's a really cool thing. Check out andydare.com for more details about how to subscribe and the whole Dare podcast network here. So, I want to thank Trevor Minear for taking the time out and coming back to the show after 5 years. You can find out more about him at Trevor Minear Music. That's M-E-N-E-A-R. And you can check that out. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that good stuff. And what boils down to it is he is one hell of a guitar player, and LP is lucky to have him with her for this awesome tour this summer. So do check it out. They'll be playing Ravinia this August, hopefully. And without further ado, my chat with Trevor Minear. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for checking out the Andy Dare Show. Today it is episode 169, and I have got a returning guest, Trevor Minear. How you doing?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
Pretty great. Yeah, I mean, the last time we talked, I think that was like my second month of doing the show back in 2011.
Yes, I remember.
So, yeah, I was just sweating in my living room, talking into a web camera, and now I've got a decent little setup. I'm throwing the mic through a Tascam 4-track. We've got that hooked up to a computer. And, yes, right. A lot happens in 5 years, and you're going out on tour with an awesome singer-songwriter named LP, the letters LP. You can find out more at imlp.com. And, so it starts in July?
Yeah, I've been playing with her for about a year, and her tour, we're opening for Brian Ferry, and it starts in July. I believe it's the 11th through the 19th.
Nice. And how'd you hook that up?
Yeah. I've been friends with LP for a bit, and we've done some writing together and have played in some other bands together. She's always had a solo career, but she needed a guitar player, and I do it as much as I possibly can.
Nice.
And it's just been a year off and on with her, and she locked down a pretty decent tour, so Other than that, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, yeah, I'm reading up on LP, and like most people in the music industry, it's not an overnight thing. She has been kicking around for 15 years, and she's only like a year older than me. So, I mean, she started off young, I guess the singer from Cracker, David Lowery, he somehow got her a record deal back in like 2000, 2001. And went from label to label, as it tends to be, and then found a second life with writing for people. And you do see that a lot when people like strike out on their own, and then they realize, oh shit, this is actually harder than I thought. And then you can actually find work writing. Would you ever think about writing for others too? Or?
I have. I don't do it a lot, but I definitely do a lot of writing. I've actually written some stuff with LP recently as well, and then probably on the past couple records that I've made, there's two or three songs that I've written with other people that ended up being my own. But yeah, I'm not opposed to it. I'm pretty much an open book. So
nice. And she's got the new EP, the Death Valley EP, coming June 17th. Couple tracks up there at imlp.com. Are you playing on this too?
You know what? I don't know. I can't remember, but I don't think so, because there was a lot of I've cut a handful of tracks with her, but I think she's releasing a record after this that's going to be a full album, and I think there's some songs from this EP, and then there's some other songs that aren't, and I forget which ones I played on.
Nice.
But I'm not sure. I haven't bothered to check what the track listing is on this yet, to be honest with you, but I'm not sure.
Nice. There is a modern, soulful, yet poppy, yet almost hip-hop feel to some of these tracks I'm listening to now. There's a Muddy Waters track, song called Muddy Waters. And have you informed her that you used to hang out in the town where Muddy died, Westmont, Illinois, where I'm recording this?
I didn't, but that's a great call. I remember going to his house a few times in Westmont. Yeah, that's rad.
Yeah, your dad and I, we were trying to somehow get a Muddy Waters jam going on in the town of Westmont, and a lot of red tape to through and stuff like that, and they've already got a million fests here, but I figure why not celebrate the man who brought, like, the real gritty blues to Chicagoland, you know?
Yeah, is his house still there? Do you know, it's been at least 10 years since I've actually...
It is still there, but it's not. There's no plaque on it. There's no nothing on it. You think they would at least put a plaque on it or put some sort of thing to recognize it? But I believe on Adams Street, right? Something like that.
Yeah,
right by the
Adam
tracks.
Street, I think. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
And I remember hearing stories of him trying to get like Mick Jagger and Keith Richards to come out, and they wouldn't want to come all the way out to the burbs, so they made him come downtown and stuff. But I believe there was a wedding in Westmont where Eric Clapton and Jagger came for Muddy Waters. I don't know if it was a family member's wedding or if it was Muddy's wedding. I don't
know.
Yeah,
I've actually heard that, too.
Something like
that. That's right.
Yeah, but the blues has totally informed your music. I mean, on your solo EPs and stuff like that. Broken Drum, one of my favorites.
Thanks, man.
How have you... it's hard to take the blues and bring it to a modern format. Do you struggle with that, or is it something that doesn't really need to be fixed, doesn't need to change with the times?
I don't really think about that. Most of the bulk of my original writing definitely was more rooted in blues, but I've always listened to so many different things, just mainly because, you know, growing up in our house, we had a lot of stuff always going on in terms of diversity and, like, you know, records I'm talking about specifically. So I don't know. I try not to overthink it. You know, I'm sort of a sponge. So whatever I'm getting into at the moment definitely affects anything that I write. But I guess there's always kind of a common thread of blues and roots music in there. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't really try to think about it too much.
Nice. Yeah, for the people hearing this, Kevin Matthews is Trevor's dad. He is a radio DJ, People call him a legend for the last 30 years in Chicagoland, now back up in Grand Rapids where he started. Did he bring a lot of promo music from the radio station? Back, you know, 20 years ago, it was all about the promo CDs, stacks of promo CDs. Was that something that was often available to you?
Yep, my first two CDs, actually, were promo CDs that he brought back from the radio station, and they were CDs that I asked for.
Nice.
Because what was, and that was probably in 1990 or 91, and he brought home Vanilla Ice's debut record, and he also brought home Nirvana Nevermind.
That's nice range there, yeah.
It is. It was a crazy range, yeah.
At my record store, we'd get the promo CDs too, and like I got Beck's Midnight Vultures album like 6 weeks before it came out, and it said not even final master on the CD, so I felt pretty special
How
bringing
that
out.
How did that happen? That is crazy.
Yeah, no artwork at all. It was awesome.
Well, I guess if it gets recalled, they can do that, you know, I'm sure. I've never heard of that. That's crazy.
I'm sure if I didn't play it like 5,000 times, it would be worth something, but that thing is scratched to hell. But
oh really?
Yeah, is this something that the kids nowadays, with the streaming on Apple Music and Spotify, is something like lucking out with an early promo CD something completely lost on the millennials?
That's a great question. I definitely think that stuff is appreciated as much anymore. Like,
no.
I have a bunch of friends that collect vinyl, and you know, like I have a good friend of mine has like the original Marvin Gaye vinyl acetate.
Nice.
Or like a test, or like, you know, like test pressings.
Sure.
Like he has a bunch of test pressings from mastering studios. And you know, like I definitely appreciate that stuff. And I actually still have a handful of the promos that my dad used to bring back from the station. And I bought promos too when I could find them.
Sure.
But yeah, for me personally, yeah, I'm a collector, so I'm way into that stuff. But I think, yeah, of course that stuff is lost. I mean, I would totally argue that it's lost within our generation, I guess. My mom came into town, and we went to Disneyland with my sister and my brother-in-law and our nephews and stuff. And my mom was just basically, you know, because my mom works with like the millennial generation, and she, you know, they were talking about music and records too. And there's just a vast difference in general. Not to say that it's good or bad, but I would, you know, if you're talking about like collecting that kind of stuff, I would say, yeah, totally. It's like a lost art form. It's kind of sad.
It is. It's a little sad, but now it's kind of cool to see the vinyl resurgence coming back. But, like, I just got a new iPhone, and it came with Apple Music loaded on there already. And I look, and I've got the library of, like, the entire, I'd say 96% of stuff I search for is on there for $9.99 a month.
Oh, yeah. I haven't checked out Apple Music yet.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it's a luxury, I feel.
They give it to you right away. That's how they get you. Do you remember when that, what was it like when that U2 record came out and everybody got the one single for free? It was something like that. I can't remember.
Everybody
freaked
out. Yeah, everybody freaked out when their latest album, like maybe 2 or 3 years ago, was just loaded on there. But I think that was before everybody was streaming on these services. So it's kind of like taking up space and stuff on your phone, which unwanted.
Totally.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, the thing is like, the guy who found LP, David Lowery, he's actually a huge artist rights advocate, and he is suing Spotify. He's trying to bring down the behemoth of Spotify with a bunch of other artists and stuff like that. And while I do appreciate that, you know, fighting for artist rights and stuff, I think the cat's out of the bag as far as, if it's not going to be Spotify, it's going to be Apple Music. If it's not that, it's going to be the new thing. It's going to be Tidal, all this different stuff. I think you're just trying to, you know, stop the floodgates that have already opened. But, yeah, he does say every click on Apple Music, you get 0.00001 cent or something like that. But as you know, as a working musician, if you're not playing shows, you're not working, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, unless you're a writer. Or are you just specifically a recording artist? Like, I mean, some of my favorite, like Nick Drake and Harry Nilsson, barely played live at all.
That's
and
true.
They made,
yeah.
You know, amazing records.
Steely Dan.
Nick Drake,
yeah.
Not as many records, obviously, because he passed away young. But
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, with me, the whole streaming thing is, you know, the stage of where I'm at right now and where I'll always kind of continue to be at is just, you know, making as many records, not as I can for the sake of making a lot of records, but after I'm done making a record, I don't listen to it all, and then I'm sort of just on with the next thing.
Nice.
So for me, you know, I always, you know, I've 3 out of the 4 records in my catalog I put out independently. So when I do that, you know, you have a pretty good choice of how you want to distribute it. And you could really be specific on if you want it to go on Spotify or not. So
sure.
I always usually just opt in for, you know, putting it out to whatever goes. And so, you know, I'm aware that, you know, the royalties on Spotify suck, but I think in certain circles it's better than nothing. I'm just, you know,
I would also argue that
both,
like,
sides of the argument.
Yeah,
but,
totally.
I will say that I think that I read something recently. I think it was like, in order for an artist to make the salary that a Spotify employee makes, that like one of their songs has to have like 274 million
nice.
Spins or something. It's something crazy like that. So
it is true. Like if you wanted to make money in the music industry,
compromise that. And that the exchange rates could be, like, a little bit better. Not exchange rates, what am I talking about? But you know what I'm saying.
Sure, yeah. I did hear somebody say that if I wanted to make money in the music industry, I wouldn't be a musician. I would have worked for Spotify. That is true. But
yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you gotta do it for yourself. I mean, like, I teach 2 days a week, and I play on the side with, you know, LP's one of the people that I play on the side with outside of my own music, but
sure.
You got to keep busy and like it no matter what.
Yeah. And I would also argue that winning over a set of ears on Spotify may help sell a ticket down the line. So it's not lost, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, totally. Absolutely.
So you're teaching guitar. Are these kids, teenagers, adults?
Both, actually. Right now I have a student that is 56 years old, and then I have another student that is 7 years old.
Wow, nice.
And then most of the kids that I teach are in high school now, or just getting ready to go into music in college, so I try to prepare them.
Nice. It would be cool to try to help, like, find a young mind and try to, like, influence it positively by turning them on to some sort of music that influenced you coming up a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, like, that's interesting. I mean, each student has totally different interests, but there are sort of, I don't know, like, I had a handful of teachers growing up, that basically all had different methods of teaching. I had one teacher that I took from the longest that helped me prepare to study music in college. So
nice.
When you have kids like that, there are sort of like just basics that everybody should know.
Sure.
And, you know, and so I try to do that, but you know, a lot of what we do is transcribing too, and you know, learning songs that they want to learn and stuff. But yeah, you know, like most of the kids by now that have been taking lessons from me know that I love, you know, Allman Brothers. I love Gypsy Jazz. I love Nirvana still. So, you know, I've probably given them tips or steered them in some sort of direction of
That's cool.
what I used to listen to.
How about
whether
this?
I'm,
like,
aware of it or not.
I took lessons from a guy in Clarendon Hills named Jim Hirschman. Does the name ring a bell for you?
No, that doesn't ring a bell.
He lived right by Prospect Park, kind of.
Yeah.
Okay. He was kind of popular when we were coming up, and his deal was you bring a CD, you turn it on, then you just jam out to it. And we realized it just turned into a jam session, and after 2 years, my mom realized it was just a jam session. I loved going. I didn't want to miss a time. And it's weird because while he didn't really teach me a lot about theory, he taught me about how to enjoy listening and playing along to music. And that's something that I still have, and that is actually pretty important that I didn't become completely bored with music. He found a way for me to completely be interested and stay with it. So I think his lessons were actually very important for me.
Nice. Yeah. There's two things to be said on that. One is, you know, when you're learning things by ear and you sort of can understand what's going on, and learn parts, that's all good. It's all good, you know.
Sure.
There's also something, but like, you know, if you do that and then if you don't know the names of the things you're playing or how to describe them, or you know the names of the chords or sort of like what key you're in. Start there, you know. If you don't know what key you're in, you may not want to know that stuff, but like down the road, that's all important stuff.
It could help.
Theory's important. Theory's, I'm into both worlds. Like when I started playing guitar, I taught myself for the first 4 years, and then I took lessons from my first teacher was this guy, John Katke, and he taught at the LaGrange Soundpost in LaGrange. And I took lessons with him for about like a year. And he was a monster blues player and was well-educated in jazz, too. Also great piano. I mean, I'm sure he's still playing around Chicago. And I know he used to play with the Black Crows. But
oh, nice.
And then there was like this moment of turning 13 where all I wanted to do was play like Eddie Van Halen.
Nice.
And So I wanted to learn how to like tap and do all that shit. So I started taking lessons from a guy named Kevin Buck for about a year. And then I guess I kind of got more into like just I wanted to kind of learn everything and started to get more into jazz. And anyways, the teacher that I took from the longest was this guy, Dave Urich, who was friends with my dad and played guitar in my dad's band. But he happened to have, you know, a very strong, like, vocabulary and a lot of diversity. He was, like, in his own right, he was definitely more of a shredder, but, you know.
Nice. But
jazz, I could bring in anything to him, and I would learn something, you know.
And he knew all about all the theories and all the different chords and everything like that and was able to educate you?
Of course, yes. Nice.
That is pretty awesome. Yeah. And, yeah, I definitely see both sides of that. Wanting to have the entire vocabulary, as you said, definitely helped. And as I went to try out for the jazz band the next year, I didn't have that vocabulary, so I was kind of missing.
Oh, really?
I was missing an arrow in my quiver, as you would say. But, but I still love music to this day. I love jamming with my buddies.
Because once you get to the level of being, like, a full-time musician, I guess there comes a point where it's like, to me, like the really, really great players that can pick things up really, really quickly and hear things really well are all appreciate jazz to some degree. And there's something to be said about that because it's kind of like the yardstick that you always kind of constantly compare yourself to, because it's hard to learn how to play changes that modulate into different keys with, you know, the right kind of vocabulary. So it's hard. That's why, you know, you might not like it at first, but playing like a jazz standard correctly, like if you could play bebop, you know, you can go a long way.
Yeah.
If you know how to play bebop, you know, over a song that changes through four different keys and you can make it sound like
smooth,
you're playing bebop, you know.
Yeah.
Then when you look at, you know, a lot of rock and roll,
that's easy in comparison.
It's not worse. It's not better or worse. It just seems like less of a challenge, maybe. But
that is true.
On the other hand, not all the time either. I don't know.
How about LP? Is her stuff more towards the pop genre, more the rock genre, not as many crazy seventh chords?
Like, when, I don't know, like, I get this a lot because you know, people always ask me, like, oh, I hear you're playing with this girl LP, like, what's your music like? And I always say she's kind of like, she's like a female Jeff Buckley, because her,
nice,
she has an incredible range. She has this really high falsetto that she can kick into. Partly the reason for that is her mother was actually an opera singer and was a soprano. Oh. So I know she gets it from her, but to me, she's like a Jeff Buckley, but poppier, I would say.
That's high praise. That's very cool. And going out with Brian Ferry of Roxy Music, that guy's got his fingerprints on all sorts of modern music now. His influence is definitely felt. Are you looking forward to meeting Brian?
I am, man. I mean, that's obviously a great gig, and, you know, to meet him is just going to be super cool.
Not only is he
just
an awesome songwriter.
The venues, well, you know, for me too,
are
a big deal. Like, I know that the first gig is at Massey Hall, and we're playing the Beacon Theater for, I think, two or three nights, and then I know we're playing the Ryman. I also know, like, I believe he's playing in Chicago, but I don't know if we're opening for him in Chicago yet or not. There's still some gray areas.
I've got an August date, the Ravinia, Highland Park Ravinia, August 6th. So
yeah, that's on his tour schedule, but as far as I know, that date wasn't given to me yet. So I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe he found another opener, which would suck, because, you know, all my people are in Chicago. But, you know, I think the final opening schedule for us is still being worked
coming
out.
Coming soon. Okay, cool.
I know all the ones that are confirmed. There's about 15 or 16 shows. So
yeah, talk about the Ryman, talk about Massey Hall, Beacon Theater. These are all storied halls in American history, rock history. So that's pretty awesome just
totally.
Doing that. Yeah.
But yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, she's got the new EP, Death Valley, coming June 17th. He'll be hitting the road pretty much all summer, hitting up these awesome venues. TrevorManeerMusic.com for your stuff, right?
Yeah, TrevorManeerMusic.com. And actually, you could actually stream all my records on my website as well.
Nice.
You don't have Spotify or any of that.
Cool.
But yeah, I'm very easy to find. My music's pretty easy to find. So
nice. Well, as always, this has been a blast. Say hi to Kevin, say hi to everybody. We'll hope to see you opening for Brian Ferry at Ravinia. We'll definitely spread the word once we know if that's for sure or not. So
I hope so. Yeah.
Nice.
I'll know pretty soon, but I'm hoping so. So it would be sad, because I know, like, we're playing in Detroit, you know, and I have so many family, all my grandparents are coming out in Detroit, so I'd be bummed if we had to skip Chicago, but I don't know yet, unfortunately.
All right, cool. Well, yes, we'll definitely keep everybody updated. And on behalf of Trevor Maneer, this is Andy signing off for the Andy Dare Show. This episode of the Andy Dare Show is brought to you in part by Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue in Westmont, Illinois. Family-owned and operated since 1997, Uncle Bub's is the real deal barbecue. A family-friendly restaurant open 7 days a week. Also, it's a full-service catering company doing weddings, pig roasts, luau's, grill packages, you name it. They have a friendly, helpful staff that will make sure that your party goes off without a hitch. Call them at 630-493-9000. Visit them at 132 South Cass Avenue in Westmount, Illinois, and UncleBubs.com. Hey man, I know you like grilling. I know you like getting those dark grill marks on your burgers, fish, chicken. And I know you don't want to just dry your meat out like you're cooking with a hairdryer. Why not get the Man Grate and click through the AndyDareShow.com's banner so we can keep the lights on here at Honeycomb Hideout Studios in gorgeous Westmont, Illinois. The Man Grate. This episode of the Andy Dare Show is brought to you in part by Record Utopia, a music lover's dream with thousands of vinyl records, musical instruments, and sound gear. They buy, sell, and trade. Give them a call at 630-963-1957. Visit them in Westmont, Illinois at 309 West Ogden Avenue, on the web at recordutopia.com. It's always a good, relaxed atmosphere. Check them out, Record Utopia. This has been a presentation of the Andy Dare Show and Dare Network. Copyright 2016. All rights reserved. Thank you so much for listening, and please do check out andydare.com for more info.